So there we were, a couple of 11-year-olds, with permission from our parents to stay up all night, trying to make contact with the rest of the civilized world. My buddy Ralph was a ham radio operator. That was a somewhat mystical title to me. I had no idea what feats of magic and scholarship it took to maintain that title. Here we were, in Ralph's basement, in front of his orange glowing transmitter. There was some sort of 24-hour ham radio competition going on, testing who could make the most verifiable radio contacts in one day. All we had was a little telegraph key and determination. I did not understand the all-important Morse code, but I could still help. Ralph taught me by rote how to key in da-dit, da-dit, da-da-di-da, di-di-dit, di-di-dit. I remember it to this day. It means CQSS, which stood for Calling Anybody Sweepstakes. This told other people listening to their ham radio rigs that we wished to make contact with anybody as part of a competition. When Ralph would recognize beeps from someone trying to answer, he would take over the telegraph key and laboriously exchange the information necessary to legally claim the contact. At certain points, I remember Ralph kind of dozing off. At those points, despite my frantic keying of CQSS, CQSS, I had no way of knowing if anyone was trying to answer us. The faint beeps I heard on Ralph's receiver meant nothing to me. Ralph was the only one who could interpret its magical content. We didn't come anywhere near close to winning the competition. In fact, before the sun came up, we both fell asleep in our chairs, lulled by the soothing static of the radio receiver. Now here we are today, not so many years later, and I speak in English, without a license and call letters, to the entire world, with far less skill and effort than that night in Ralph's basement. It is truly, truly a wonderful world we live in. Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. Not all boys grow up to be jocks, as popular social mythology seems to predict. Some boys are raised by geeks to be geeks. There is no value judgment involved in this observation. The world needs both jocks and geeks. But when you are growing up, there are enormous social forces that can make you desperate to be something you are not. That's why I'm calling this edition of Digital Flotsam, The Legacy of Geeks. Like all people, I am a product of my parents. My dad was always a bit of a geek, so when other kids were learning how to catch a baseball, I was learning how to operate a tape recorder. When other boys were learning how to throw a perfect spiral with a football, I was learning how to discharge the high-voltage vacuum tubes inside our TV set so we could take them to the store and test them on the machine. As a result, although I was an avid baseball fan, I was never a very good baseball player. When I was around 8 years old, I demonstrated both my love for baseball and my inability to play it when I bravely decided to participate in Little League tryouts. Tryouts were held in the huge double baseball field directly across the street from my apartment building. It was the kind of thing only an innocent young child would do. For although I had a baseball glove and my very own solid ash baseball bat, I had never actually played a game of baseball in my life. So at the tryouts, you would register, receive a number to wear on your shirt, and then proceed from station to station to be tested on various skills. All along the way, various Little League coaches would make notes about the players on their clipboards. Of course, we all hoped we would be picked for a team. When asked what position I was trying out for, I said outfielder. Mickey Mantle was an outfielder. So at the first station I went to, there was a man standing around 50 or 60 feet away with a ball and a bat. I was to have my ability to field a ball tested. I felt pretty confident about catching grounders, but fly balls were something else altogether. I didn't have much experience with that. When it was my turn, I walked out in front of this guy, and he gestured with his bat down towards the grass. This apparently meant he was going to hit me some grounders. I wondered to myself how he could do that, actually decide where he was going to hit. In my experience, you swung hard at the ball, and if you made contact, the ball would go somewhere. Up, down, foul, fair. You just had to take what you got. But this adult could predict somehow exactly where the ball was going to go. As I expected, I did really great at this part. I even had to run a little to catch up with some of the grounders, but I got them all. He even hit me one a little high that I caught on one bounce. In reality, I brought the glove up in front of my face as more of a defensive flinch, but the ball wound up trapped in my glove. I looked out towards the coaches with the clipboards for some sign that I was doing as well as I thought I was, but they didn't even seem to be watching me. The guy now gestured by pumping the end of his bat skyward twice. I knew what this meant. This was going to be a pop-up. I had never even attempted to catch one of these before. Normally, I would just wait for it to hit the ground, pick it up, and throw it back. But I knew they wanted me to catch this. The guy tossed the ball in the air, and whack! The ball went soaring into the sky. I had never even seen a ball that high before. I had no idea if I knew how to get under it. But when it finally started to fall, it clearly looked like I wasn't going to need to move an inch. It seemed to be coming straight to me. I raised both of my hands. Having never done this before, I had no idea what it would even feel like, so I was afraid that the ball would hit my glove so hard it would just bounce out. I tensed. The ball seemed to fall faster and faster. I aimed my glove at the ball and squeezed my eyes shut in anticipation of the ball striking the glove. Whack! The ball struck hard. I couldn't believe the results. The ball hadn't bounced out of my glove as I feared it would. In fact, it hadn't even touched my glove. That whack was the sound it made as it bounced off my chest. I was mortified. I looked over at the coaches with the clipboards. None of them were even looking in my direction. Maybe they hadn't seen that. Maybe they had already picked me after I did so good on those grounders. Next stop was batting. This was being done on an actual baseball diamond. Not only that, but the field was populated by an actual Little League team. They were amazing. They threw the ball so hard, it was like a bullet. They never threw it soft. Not even when they were just throwing it around the bases in between batters. So at this station, not only did you get to bat, but you got to run the bases as though it was a real game. When it was my turn, I walked up to the plate and took my stance. The pitcher threw a blazing pitch. I just watched it go by. I wasn't about to swing without a feeling for how fast this ball was coming. I retook my stance, and another pitch came tearing in. Again, I didn't swing. The pitcher glared at me. The catcher stood up and walked forward. He made a logical assumption and thoughtfully said quietly, "Hey kid, you gotta swing at it. Nobody's counting balls and strikes. You can't draw a walk." He logically thought my stillness was because I didn't think they were good pitches. In reality, I was trying to imagine myself hitting any one of these blazing speedballs. I retook my stance. The pitcher threw. I closed my eyes and swung the bat as hard as I could. Crack! I opened my eyes and saw the ball sail right over the first baseman's outstretched arm. A base hit. The farthest I had ever hit a ball in my short life. I am now standing on first base, and a new batter comes up. He swings and misses the first pitch. I turn to the first baseman and I say, "Can I steal?" He looks at me with disdain and says, "I doubt it." From behind me, an adult's voice says, "If you think you can make it, go ahead and try." This was the only thing I knew I could do. I ran on the very next pitch. I could run pretty fast, but I think my success was based on the fact that I took everyone by surprise. In any event, I beat the throw, and now I was on second base. My confidence was soaring. I was playing against real little leaguers, and I got a hit and a stolen base. I took an aggressive lead. At the next pitch, I almost ran, but I wasn't quite ready. The third baseman looked at me and said, "Don't even think about it." But I was so pumped up, I really thought I could steal third. On the very next pitch, I put my head down and started running with all my might towards third base. Instantly, I heard the distinctive crack of the bat making contact with the ball. I turned my head to look just in time to be hit right between the eyes with a line drive. I can still remember the yellow flash and that metallic taste I experienced as I fell down. The next thing I was aware of is that I was somehow far away from the diamond, closer to the outer fence near the entrance to the ball field. There were adults all around me and someone was shining a light in my eyes. Somebody said, "He's going to look like a raccoon tomorrow," and everybody laughed, everybody but me. Meanwhile, my mom was looking out the living room window, thinking, I wonder why there's an ambulance over at the ball field. She had no idea I was even over there. Despite my belief that I would somehow be picked for a team, the call never came. It took several years for the dreams of baseballs flying towards my face to subside, but they eventually did, and by the time I was 13 years old, my baseball skills had dramatically increased to the level of nearly mediocre. In other words, when the neighborhood kids were choosing up sides, and it was down to just me and the retarded kid, they picked me first. But my baseball life had yet another dramatic milestone, and further proof that we all rise to the level of our expectations. Around the age of 13, we moved. We moved to a much more rural neighborhood and a more rural school. On my first day of school in the new neighborhood, I was the center of everyone's attention. My urbane manner, hairstyle, clothes, and shoes gave everybody the impression that I was some sort of a West Side Story tough guy. While this was not the truth in any way, it was a very enjoyable experience for me. I had come from being an invisible peon in a vast metropolis to being the object of everyone's attention. Everyone wanted me to be part of their group. I was drunk with my apparent appeal. That first recess was one of the most important experiences of my young life. The school principal, that's how small the school was, took all the boys outside to play softball, while the girls went in the basement to learn how to make cookies. The principal took on the role of pitcher for both teams. When the choosing of sides began, both sides wanted me as their first pick. Some game of chance was chosen to decide which side got the new guy. I had never experienced anything like this in my life. Usually, it was something like, "Okay, we'll let your little sister play, but then you have to take Fenton." When the game began, my team won the right to be up first. The first two batters went quickly. One was thrown out at first. The second hit an infield pop fly and was out also. I batted third. As I stepped to the plate, everyone was visibly excited. The team on the field shifted back and forth in nervous anticipation. My own team rose to their feet. I felt so unbelievably pumped. This is what it felt like to be Mickey Mantle. This is what it feels like to be bigger than life. I had to produce. I had to live up. I knew I could do it. The principal was just lobbing pitches. I'd show these yokels. The first pitch sailed through the air in slow motion. I gripped the bat tightly and swung with every ounce of strength I had in an upward arc. I made perfect contact. Everyone simply froze and followed the ball. The outfield fence could have been 10 times taller, and the ball still would have sailed over it. It was a mammoth shot. I think it might have been a home run in any field I had ever seen. It was the first and only home run I have ever hit. It was the most perfect thing I had ever done. So why, as I trotted around the bases triumphantly, was everybody looking at me as if I had the word idiot written across my forehead? As I approached third, something was clearly wrong. Even the principal was glaring at me. I actually stopped in my tracks and said, "What?" Since no one was allowed to climb the fence, and it took so long for anyone to get out of the school grounds to search the woods for the only ball they had, hitting a ball over the fence was an automatic out. The greatest moment in my baseball history turned out to be my worst moment, somewhere between third and home. The next day, when we chose up sides, I was chosen dead last. Right after the kid with his broken arm in a cast. And there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. As always, you can find show notes to this episode and plenty of other goodies at digitalflotsam.org. Be sure to check out the Digital Flotsam blog when you're there as well. And as usual, as soon as I'm done speaking, my old friend Big Al jumps in to tell you that
Peter holded the microphone.